Welcome to FAM for all moms.
Not all dads. All
not moms. Bad. My name is Shahrzad Kiade, and joining me today is Susan Yara and our most specialist guest of all, Elizabeth. Aww. I'm so happy that you're here.
Thank you.
You said that so seriously.
Elizabeth. It's so good to be here in person. Yeah.
Well, we've had you on Zoom, and every time you're on Zoom, I'm like, damn it, I want you here. Yeah. And now you are, and it feels very exciting. Yeah. She trekked from Vegas.
All
you notice how
over?
People say Vegas, like Vegas?
Well, because it's like fun.
Vegas. Wait, this is your character. I saw you talking about this on Instagram.
I have a new character. I think her name's going to be Kitty.
Why are you strumming your hair when you say Kitty?
That's how I get into Kitty. And Kitty, and Susan knows this because I always say this.
I love Kitty. Kitty's one of my favorite Shahrzads.
I would say 50% of the times we filled the sass, I would go, Daddy. Because Susan laughed so hard every time, and it would get us in a good mood to start filming. So I've named that girl. So now, so I stick my tits out, and I like go like this, and she's Kitty, and she's just daddy to everybody. Somebody took their silly pills. Anyway.
No, it's actually, and what's funny is today's episode's not going to be a very silly episode.
Nope.
If you guys didn't catch the last couple of episodes that we had with Elizabeth, this is Elizabeth Hunterton. She's one of my besties. We've known each other for a very long time. She has shared a little bit about her birth story and also her experience with racism and being abandoned and so much more. And I know that you guys are probably expecting an episode to continue her search for her biological mom. We have that coming. Today, though, we're going to talk about her birth story with her first son, because it was a really it was a very scary experience because he had a congenital heart disease, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you found that out while you were pregnant. So I think there's a lot that we can go over. And I think you're, you know, a lot of moms experience this where they know that there's going to be something or sometimes they don't even know that there's going to be something that happens when their child is born that will cause them to have to go right into surgery or the NICU or anything like that. So I'm really excited to share your story. So everybody, this is Elizabeth.
Thanks for having me.
Should we start with something lighthearted, like some questions?
Sure. Let's do it.
Before we get into this, because this is, I know, I feel like a lot of people enjoy. So first question, did you experience postpartum depression or anxiety after either kid or both?
So I did experience postpartum depression, and I'm also diagnosed depression, anxiety, and PTSD. So postpartum was unique, but I didn't even know I had it until my friend, we were sitting at lunch and she was like, Evangelina, who's a dear friend of both of ours, was like, okay, I'm just going to go ahead and ask, because I don't know if you know, you do realize you have postpartum depression, right? And I was like, oh.
And how did you receive that?
It made a lot of sense. It connected a lot of the dots that, because postpartum depression is different than normal depression. It feels different. It manifests different. It has different triggers. And so it made a lot of sense. And I love therapy. I go to therapy a lot. So I went to therapy for that, started regulating my hormones. But yeah, I totally had postpartum depression. But what she did for me was gave me permission to acknowledge that I had it, because that is so hard as a first time mom.
Yeah.
Because you're trying to be everything and be perfect. Right. And that is a very real.
Especially you. You're one of those people that likes to be very in control of your life, very like, you know, at least have that hard exterior.
Yes.
And so I remember you called me after you talked to Evangelina and you're like, guess what Evangelina just told me? That I have postpartum depression. And I was like, do you?
Yeah. And it did. It made a lot of sense. I was able to get the treatment I needed, which is really important, because listen, the hardest role we have to play is being a mother when we're heartbroken.
Yeah. Mm.
It's the hardest thing. But we step up and we do it.
Yeah.
And I've always known my kids deserve the best of me. And that's not me depressed. So yeah. I had to do the work in order to be a mom.
You were months out, too, when you acknowledged this, right? Like this was.
Yeah. I mean, and it plays into the birth story, right? Because I had so many things I had to be immediately for my son to survive, that it wasn't until I was able to kind of function, get in back into normalcy. But I was just doing the best I could, which still wasn't where it needed to be.
I would just want to know, what did you do that your friend noticed that made her think you were depressed?
She said it was just how I was talking.
Okay.
She said, you know, the things that you're saying, because I was telling her, I was like, yeah, so I had to pull over the other day because Eli was crying and I had to nurse him in a neighborhood. And, you know, I didn't know if people were watching, and I started spiraling, mm-hmm. which is what I do with when I get anxiety and depression. Like, I'll start going down this rabbit hole where my thought process is pretty illogical, and it just kind of starts going down this pattern. And she said, you know, you do realize you have postpartum depression. I said, well, okay, yeah, maybe I do. And then I realized just that cloud that kind of hung over me mm-hmm. after becoming a mother. And it was just this daunting feeling that I'm not doing enough. I'm not good enough. This is too much. It was, I never had the kind where I was going to hurt myself or my child. I just couldn't get out from under the cloud.
Yeah.
I just couldn't make it.
I feel like you received that really well. And I don't think a lot of people would necessarily, yeah. right? Like if yeah. you're depressed and somebody points it out, it's such a tricky thing because that could
cause it triggers shame.
Spiral,
yeah.
you know?
It right. triggers shame.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's sure. somebody who I felt like was depressed and I wanted to say something and I didn't really know how because mm-hmm. I felt like it wasn't going to
you
be
like
received.
Pointed at me at first. I was like, well, I would have told you. I haven't been receptive. Sure's on.
No. Okay. So Susan, did you feel, and I mean, these are things I know, but we're going to ask them anyway in yeah. case anybody doesn't know, but did you feel any depression or anxiety after either kid?
Yeah. So I felt, I experienced postpartum anxiety after I had Nikosh. So my first pregnancy. How about you? Was that your first pregnancy, mm-hmm. not your second though, right?
Second, I had the anxiety.
Ah.
Yeah.
Okay.
But, yeah.
So you experienced something both times then. Mm-hmm. So second time, I did not experience anything. Second time, I was like mentally prepared for it, ready for it. And then I didn't. Yeah. I didn't experience it. I also experienced COVID though.
Yeah. Right.
postpartum the second time around, but I did not luckily feel like I was depressed or had the anxiety. Mm-hmm. And I think, I don't know, I assume that I was just more mentally prepared for it. But honestly, it's just our hormones and everything, yeah. right? The first time around, everyone told me I might experience baby blues. So I chalked it up to that at first because I was like, I'm a little down. I feel really anxious. I'm very snappy. Yeah. Like I would snap at everyone. Like my husband was scared for his life kind mm-hmm. of situation. Right, like, so. Yeah, I was like, I felt like an angry person. And you know, there was even one point where my mother-in-law was like, you know, postpartum depression is a real thing. And I was like, I essentially wanted to be like, go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
How dare you? I am just
I remember
tired.
You wanted to like throw a fork at her.
Yeah.
I mean, in your mind.
No, I threw a fork at my husband.
Oh, good. Okay.
I actually
did throw
a fork.
But,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. No, it wasn't my mother-in-law. She's a good person. I didn't feel like throwing a fork at her. I was just like, I felt defensive. So yeah. I definitely got very defensive. I definitely threw a fork at my husband at one point. And it's because I was just so anxious and,
it's
you know.
It's so much. It's just so much.
Yeah. Yep. It's,
you know.
It's a lot.
How about you?
No, don't. I truly didn't. I felt great after Idris.
Great.
Because I
good
really.
Good for you, Charizard.
No, I get it, Kitty.
Think about it.
Kitty don't
feel. Kitty felt good. no, guys, because I was, I mean, I. That was such a good year for me.
Yeah.
Because I was hosting the Moms U and I couldn't have had a kid in a better environment.
Like,
I had to bring my kid to work with me, which is unheard of. I had nurses on set standing by if he like blinked the wrong way. Like that was a very unique and special experience that I got to have.
Yep.
And with Cyrus, I didn't feel depressed or anxious either. Again, I was.
You just hopped right into
it. So happy. Yeah. I will say, though, that because when I was pregnant with Cyrus, that's when like a lot of the deaths in my family started happening. So there was like my uncle who was super close to my family. My mom's little brother died suddenly right by my house. He had a heart attack in the pool while he was training for a triathlon. So that was tough to watch my mom's heart break because that was her little brother and taking care of her in a way. And he lived in L.A. So my mom came and stayed with me as we like went through his stuff and cleaned out his place. And so I did that when I was pregnant. So there was anxiety building around like death can be so quick and sudden, which of course I knew, but I hadn't experienced death in a long time. It had been since like my mid-20s since I knew a bunch of people that died. And then again, right after, I remember it so clearly. I was hiking with Shireen and Cyrus. I was wearing him. And I was feeling really good. I had just gotten this cool job opportunity and I was like feeling so good. And then I found out my cousin was dead and she was younger than me. And that was awful. And then the string of deaths just continued. So the anxiety for me came from actual from real life shit happening that has still stayed with me now. And I think because of COVID too, my anxiety is a little bit higher. Mm-hmm. You know, we've all been home so much. So leaving and doing things that are normal are giving me anxiety in a way that they haven't before because we're so used to like being at home now. So I'm kind of like, I'm really, really, really trying to work through that shit. Yeah. It's messing with me because it's not who I am. I'm not an anxious person. I'm a glasses full optimistic person, but life has just been throwing everybody curveballs, you know? So it's not just me.
It's been an overwhelming time, especially for parents who homeschool or want to homeschool their kids. And that's why Homeschool Magnet is for parents just like you. Homeschool Magnet supports homeschooling families by providing students with instruction from world-class credentialed teachers in a remote classroom with their peers. Parents get to choose the best teachers for each student based on the values and teaching approach to ensure each child is receiving exactly the education they desire. This puts you, as the parent, in full control of your child's education without the daily responsibilities of lesson planning, pre-learning, teaching, tutoring, and grading, and, you know, just like sitting there with an iPad, which nobody seems to like. Other online schools exist, but Homeschool Magnet is unique. Even though Homeschool Magnet includes a robust online learning environment, each student works from real physical learning materials guided by video instruction from the teachers. With Homeschool Magnet, you get the freedom and control of homeschooling without all the burden. It's also a fraction of the cost of private schools, and you get a 30-day money-back guarantee upon enrollment. So this means it's risk-free. To learn more about Homeschool Magnet's student experience, go to homeschoolmagnet.com and join the growing waitlist.
I really want to get into your story because we've like, I feel like not teased it in a way, but we've referenced your birth story maybe one or two times on podcast episodes with you in the past. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we've teased people to say we're going to talk about it. And I feel like I don't know the full thing. I think I only know bits of it. So walk us through the birth of your first. It was your first.
Yes. So my oldest son, who's now six, and my goal today is to like not cry on your show for like the first time. But as I was driving out from Vegas, I was like, okay, it's been forever since I talked about it. And I only really talked about it twice. So, you know, the moment I got pregnant, the magnitude of it was not lost on me. Like my son was going to be my first biological relative.
Oh, yeah.
Like that's a huge deal, you know? And I remember thinking the whole time, like, gosh, I wonder if I'll look like the baby or if he'll talk like me or, you know, I'm going to know his birthday. I'm going to know what race he is. Like, how crazy is that? Like, already he has such a different start. So, you know, so there was that. And, you know, it was just a really tough pregnancy. You know, at 23 weeks, we went in for a routine appointment. And I was like, yeah, it feels like he's burrowing. Like, I think he's trying to get out. And my doctor was like, okay, we'll take a look. And I'm so glad I was in the very capable hands of Dr. Wilkes, who was our doctor at the time. And he, I mean, he saved my son's life twice before he was even out. And, you know, he takes a look, he's like, oh, he is burrowing. I was like, yeah, I know. And he was like, okay, so we're going to need to get you in for surgery. And I was like, oh, great. So I'll be back in 3 weeks. So we'll just do it then. And he was like, oh, no. I don't think you understand. This baby is going to deliver in the next few days. And at this point, he likely will not survive outside of the womb. So we need to get you into surgery because you have what's called an incompetent cervix.
It's
so rude.
That's the part I remember. The
it's so rude.
Cervix.
Like, let's just say your offspring is so epic.
Yeah.
I can't contain it. Like, that's my technical term for it. And I was like, okay, so I have this incompetent cervix. What do we do? And he was like, well, essentially, we purse string it shut so you can't dilate and deliver. And he said, because if you deliver at this point, it'll be called a late term miscarriage or abortion. I was like, oh, no. I already made it past 12 weeks. So now I'm like exchanging dialogue with my doctor because clearly I know what I'm talking about. And he was like, no, and that's great that you made it past 12 weeks, but because I thought miscarriages only happened for the first 12 weeks.
Right.
I didn't understand.
I think that's pretty normal to think
that. Like, isn't that the milestone we all shoot
for? I don't know
for?
That I've ever thought otherwise either.
I didn't know.
Yeah. Like, I guess you know that you can have a miscarriage later, but we all
but
wait
12 weeks,
for 12
clear,
weeks to
right?
like go announce it, I guess. Yeah.
Right.
And so I was like, okay, so I'll have this procedure and we'll be okay. And he was like, yes. So 3 weeks later, I go in for another routine appointment. And he was like, Okay. And
You'd already had the surgery at this point.
Yeah. So I had the surgery. Okay. We're good. Baby's locked in there.
That was easy.
Scary though? Surgery while pregnant or?
Well, the only thing that was scary. So two things you have to know about me. One, it takes a lot of anesthesia to knock me out. Okay. Like I always need like double dose.
Same.
Right.
Yeah. And I need pediatric levels.
Second, they have to give me the drug to reverse the anesthesia because I won't wake up. So there are those two things that happen.
Oh, damn.
They're doing the procedure and I was like, I feel that. And he's like, well, you're going to feel pressure. I was like, no, I know you just grabbed something and you're pulling. He's like, put her out.
Oh, wow.
And so then I woke up from the procedure. I was like, is it competent? It was competent. So I went back 3 weeks later for a routine appointment and the doctor, the pediatric cardiologist was there just doing a screen because my doctor is like a family member. And he was like, I'm going to do for you what I would do for my daughter. So the cardiologist comes in, he looks, he's like, okay. All right, your son has a heart anomaly. I was like, okay, what's that mean?
Yeah.
And he said, it's called coarctation of aorta, which is essentially the little candy cane thing on the top of the heart is pinched shut, which would prevent blood going to his lower extremities. And it used to be you wouldn't catch that at birth.
Yeah.
You would have a baby and months down the line, he would either be walking or running one day and just drop dead, or you would go to his crib and he'd be blue and deceased.
Wow.
Like it's just this silent killer. So we caught that one and I was like, okay. And I'm a first time mom and moms are really good at blaming ourselves, right?
Oh yeah.
So I was a vegetarian before I was pregnant with Eli, but like when I got pregnant, I was like, I want meat. Give me all your meat. If you don't, I'll eat your arm.
Yeah.
So I ate meat and salami was on the do not eat list, but I ate it anyway. And I was like, great. Now look, I ate salami and I caused my son's heart. That's just awesome. Really good job. Science will disprove that. Every medical professional will disprove that. That's my truth. There's really not a whole lot anybody can do to talk me out of it.
Oh, wait, you still blame yourself.
Oh, 100%. Like,
it's
that salami.
It's so sad what we do.
It's what
ourselves,
we do, right?
But and I know. Exactly
I know on a rational, logical, but in my mind, I will probably always reserve a little space for that. So then, you know, I'm kind of stressed, kind of scared, but, you know, trying to rally.
Well, what do they, I mean, obviously, you have like a million questions. You're probably in shock at that point. And then
I was, in fact, so much so that I had to call the doctor after the fact. I'm like, I'm so sorry. What did you say it was called? And he was like, I will tell you, but you can't Google it.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. So he repeats it, coarctation of aorta. He's like, because if you read anything on the internet that is more than a day old, it's obsolete. Mm. He said, there's a lot of bad information. And I said, okay. And he said, you know, we'll have to wait and see if it's going to necessitate a heart surgery. I said, okay.
Okay, so they're telling you this is an anomaly. It might or might not.
It might. Like, we'll see.
Like, is it a big deal, period, or what?
It is, but we don't know what it will do when his circulatory system takes over and he breathes oxygen for the first time on his own.
Right, because you, can't predict you that are at, the, he has at my that oxygen. Point.
Yes.
Got it.
And
okay.
You're 27 weeks pregnant-ish.
Yeah, this was 26 weeks.
Mm-hmm. 26 weeks.
Yes.
Wow.
So then I come in. So I'm sitting in the car. Just like, okay, what did he say? And I'm just, my mind has always been this way, right? Like it will get a lot of information and I take like these little tiny pieces and I will process just that for a little bit. And then, you know, I'll deal with it. So 29 weeks, I go in 3 weeks later for another routine appointment. And he was like, okay, this is interesting.
Eek.
So he has another heart anomaly.
Oh, wait, you know what?
Yeah.
I don't know if I remember any of this.
He had two. And coarctation of aorta is rare, but not, it's one in 10,000. The fistula, which was the second anomaly, made him ungoogleable.
Mm.
You don't diagnose fistulas in children. It just doesn't happen. So I would look on all these leading children's heart websites and it wasn't on there. There's no published work. I didn't have a survival rate. I knew nothing about it. Any moms out there now that have children with fistulas, you can check the websites. They're on there because some psycho in Las Vegas was like, you need to add it to your website.
She's saying her.
Like, it's me. It was so rare. Like I called Boston Children's, which is really the leader in all things children's heart. And, you know, I said, my son has a fistula. And they're like, oh, you know, we have a policy and procedure for second opinions. And I said, well, my son has a fistula. And you hear this like scrambling of papers.
Yeah.
And they're like, hold, please. And somebody gets on, hello, this is Dr. So-and-so. And I was like, hi, my son has a fistula. And he was like, are you certain? I was like, I couldn't make it up. Like,
yeah.
Yes, that's what the doctor told me, he has a fistula. And he said, I said, what point do I need to move to Boston? to have my baby? Like, what do I need to do? And he said, you know, where are you? I said, Las Vegas. He said, you have one of five surgeons in the world that I would trust to do my own child surgery in Las Vegas. Dr. Socolo will take care of your baby. I said, okay. And so what happened for the rest of the pregnancy is that every sonographer, every ultrasound tech, every doctor would come in when I would come in so they could do the, because no one will ever see it again. This fistula is so rare, to the point where first diagnosed case of the two coexisting anomalies, statistically, one in 327 million that it will happen again.
Oh my God.
Like, it's just so rare. And, you know, it's hard to have an ungoogleable kid.
Yeah.
And
there's maybe good. I don't know. Is it good or is it bad?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a lot for a first time mom.
Yeah.
And there were nothing in my pregnancy books, first of all, about the incompetent cervix or the cerclage procedure or the heart anomalies. So I chucked my normal pregnancy books out. Yeah. Like, this is for the
what
normal
to expect?
People.
Yeah, what to expect.
You know, like, this is not for me. And after the second appointment, like at 29 weeks, that was when we started measuring in milestones. Like, if we make it to 32 weeks, 36 weeks, 38 weeks. And
So you find out it's a fistula.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean?
Yeah, fistula is an abnormal connection. And anything when you're dealing with congenital heart, it's not genetic. It just happens.
Interesting.
It just happens without explanation. And so he had this abnormal connection that would essentially prevent the flow of blood going through all four chambers of the heart. And it just happens, which my mind really can't wrap it around. Like, something caused it, but it doesn't. It just happens.
Yeah.
So,
right. Like, you were never going to be able to prevent this from happening.
It was just going to happen.
This episode of Fam for All Moms is brought to you by ModCloth. ModCloth is making getting dressed so fun. They are back to being independently owned, and they're all about getting the perfect fit for every body. They have unique mood-boosting prints, vintage-inspired, versatile styles that make you look good, and most importantly, feel good. Find your joy at ModCloth. You guys, I got the most amazing long sleeve, velvety, soft, delicious emerald blazer from ModCloth the other day. It's got a little belt that cinches in at the waist, and it's so fun and festive, and I can't wait to wear it for the holidays. So of course we have a fun little discount code for you guys to get 20% off your purchase of $75 or more, including sale items. Go to modcloth.com and enter code all moms, ALLMOMS at checkout. Promo code cannot be combined with other offers. Again, that's modcloth.com and enter code all moms for 20% off your order of $75 or more. You guys are going to love all the clothes.
They tell you he's got a fistula. You call up Boston Medical, all this stuff. But what have they told you? Like, is he going to survive? What are the chances?
We don't know.
Okay, at that point, you don't know.
We know that he will probably have to have heart surgery at birth. The question is, will it be interventional, where they go in through a vein in the groin up to the heart, crazy in itself, or will it be open heart, where they cut him open and have open heart surgery?
At birth.
And, you know, I do what I start doing best, which is researching. And, you know, at this point, I'm like, I need something to read my son. I need something empowering, something that will celebrate him. So I start researching for children's characters with scars, empowering things. And there isn't one. And I was like, all right, fine. That's fine. I'll make one. I'll write a poem. I sketch this little bear, and he had heart surgery and he had patches on him. And so I had this little bear named Badges. And I was like, okay, that's done. If he needs heart surgery, I'll have something to read him, but I'm still reading it to him while he's in the womb. Then we have to go through marital counseling because it's a requirement of the Children's Heart Center, because medical fragilities and medical issues can really destroy a marriage. Yeah. We were very lucky. It brought us closer, and I love who we became in that season, but it was hard. And then, you know, so I go through the rest of my pregnancy. After the 29-week appointment, I decide I will allow myself to be human and have a human emotional reaction. However, I had a dream, and I'm gonna talk about this dream, but I'm gonna try really hard not to cry because you remember pregnancy dreams, how vivid they were, right?
Yeah.
I had this dream shortly after the 29-week appointment where my son didn't make it. And the funeral director comes to me and says, "You need to eulogize your son." And I was like, "I couldn't possibly." And he said, "But you are the only one who knows him. You're the only one who knows his personality. He has been in you. You're all he has." And I said, "Okay." And after that dream, you know, I realized I am all he has. He is counting on me to do everything I can to ensure that he survives. So I allow myself 12 hours after every appointment to be sad and scared, but then I will be whoever he needs me to be. He needs my strength. He needs my reassurance. And he needs me to remind him. So every morning I would wake up and I would say, "Do you feel that? Your heart's stronger today than it was yesterday, but not as strong as it'll be tomorrow." And I would say it every day, like in the morning and at night. And I think it brought out the best in me. Like I really just knew he was going to be okay. And so we had to have a planned C-section because we had to coordinate the schedules of all of the cardiology surgeons, yeah, all of the cardiologists who wanted to visit to see this one of a kind heart. And so, you know, we wake up that morning and we get to the hospital and we have our small faithful army out in the lobby. And, you know, they deliver my son and they let me see him for 3 seconds. And then I don't see him again until 12 hours later. And when I woke up, I don't know how I got up to the fourth floor. I remember I got out of bed and I was like, "Oh, this feels different. This is unpleasant," is what this is.
This is post-C-section.
Post-C-section.
Drugs are wearing off.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I know I have to find my son.
Yeah.
So I get out of bed and I start like, you know, the shuffle you do that 1 inch at a time.
Oh, yeah. And your socks and your butts out.
And you don't care.
Yeah.
You've got the massive pad. Yep. You're like, "Oh, it's the most unglamorous moment." Yep. So I start doing my 1 inch shuffle out the door. I know I made it to the elevator. I remember that much. Somehow I arrive in my son's room at PICU in a wheelchair. I don't know what happened.
Wait, did you call it a PICU?
Yeah, pediatric intensive care unit.
Oh, okay.
Actually, yeah, people don't know the difference between PICU and NICU.
So PICU, yeah. NICU is usually where babies are catching up or where they, mm-hmm, they have not had an invasive procedure.
Right.
PICU is post-surgery.
So
I had to get up 2 floors. Somebody got me there.
Can I backtrack just 1 second? Did you know at this point he was going to have surgery or was it a game time decision?
So I didn't know. I was in recovery with this couple that was, they were like arguing and I kept like opening the curtain to counsel like, "Guys, this is tough." You know, as I'm like drugged.
I can see you do that.
I mean, I'm drugged and I'm, you know, dropping pearls of wisdom and they keep closing the curtain and I'm like, "It's me again." I just keep reopening.
I can see you.
For hours.
It doesn't matter what you're going through. You still will advise other people.
And I know they're like, "Hey, crazy." And I'm like, "Don't worry, I'm still here."
Chill without that last note.
Yeah. Sorry, I don't know where I dozed off, but I'm back. And Nate says he came in and told me that they were going to do surgery. I don't remember any of this.
Nate is her husband, everybody.
Yeah, Nate's my husband. So my doctor, Dr. Wilkes, who is like my brother-in-law via step parents and all of this, he takes the entire day off, delivers my baby, and then follows him all day into surgery, into his heart surgery. He's there every step of the way.
How did they know that they're putting him in surgery?
I don't know. Like Nate knows that. I think what happened is when his circulatory system processed its own oxygen.
Like the minute they took him out. Is that what
it
is?
Yeah. So I saw him for 3 seconds. They took him. They started assessing him, hoping that the oxygen would correct the issues.
Got it.
Which they didn't, or it didn't. And so they took him back and they did the open heart surgery at 5 hours old.
And you don't know even that they're doing this.
I'm counseling.
Point. Yeah.
I'm counseling people in the recovery room.
And you're just kind of out of it.
And you're on drugs.
I'm totally out of it.
A C-section. Yeah.
I'm totally out of it. So I wake up 12 hours later at 9 p.m. and shuffle my way up there. And I get wheeled in and I remember seeing this incubator and this tiny little baby with like 14 tubes and wires and hoses and his face is covered in tape and he's got his air oxygen things and his face is swollen. And and his chest is open.
Yeah.
You know,
and people don't realize that. So when a baby, newborn baby, right?
When any child has open heart surgery, they leave it open.
Oh my God.
Because the heart swells during surgery. And if you close it, it won't have the room to beat. And the skin is so fragile. You only want to close it once.
Yeah.
And
I had no idea.
Yeah, I didn't either until Liz told me this.
It will forever be cherished as one of my most beautiful, precious, and intimate moments when I saw my son's beating heart.
Oof. Yeah.
Like I could see, like it was this beautiful little heart. And this is the same heart I had listened to 4 days a week, you know, on the monitor. And here it is beating, and he's so strong. And I get wheeled over, and I was like, sweetie, it's mommy's here. And he takes it, he goes, and takes this deep breath and like grabs my finger so tight. Like he knew I was there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so beautiful. And
he was tiny.
He was just the most precious thing. And on day two, his heart rate had been elevated for most of the day. And you know, when you have a medically fragile child, you know what every medication is doing, what it needs to be, what the level should be, what each sound is. And the rhythmic nature of the pulse machine and the oxygen that...
Yeah.
Like it almost becomes like this really beautiful symphony of all of these different beeps and buzzes and hums and lulls. And
But what are you feeling? I remember like when I first saw him, I was like, I mean,
as a mom,
I was taken aback.
But, you know, as a mom, you don't get the luxury to deal with things in real time. I'm like, you need colostrum? Yes. I'm the only one that can produce that. I'm on it.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, instantly, whatever I could do to improve his chances, I was going to do. And, you know, it was if he can live to the 12-hour mark, 24, 36, 48, 72. Like, I mean, we were living in 12-hour increments. And on day five, they closed his chest. And I got to hold my son for the first time on Christmas Eve, which was day six. And when I say hold my son, it means I could have a pillow in my lap and the nurse could come and take him out and put him on the pillow. Like I didn't hold him until the following week, but it still counts.
Yeah.
But I think as a mom, like you're not dealing with the magnitude of what he's going through. Like I will be whatever you need me to be right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I started reading that poem that I'd written for him, Badges, to him in the PICU. And it's a very beautiful thing that happens in the PICU unit. You have people from all different walks of life, unified by the one common denominator that we want to take our babies home. Mm. That's all we want.
Yep.
So we see each other in the break room and we see each other in the halls. And next to us was a meth baby who was one of my greatest teachers and that he taught me that life can be truly unfair. And I've done everything right as a mom, with the exception of the salami. With the exception of the salami, like I did everything right.
No, she did. She was very careful.
I did everything right. And we are next door to the meth baby and our sons have similar conditions. It doesn't matter. And this baby next to us had no visitors ever.
With the exception
of the other parents at the PICU unit. We would all go and we would all take turns. And we'd actually even asked about adopting him, but thankfully the paternal grandparents were going to take him. But before I knew it, you know, it started with one nurse like, oh, I want a copy of Badges, the poem. And I was like, okay. Then the whole floor has it. And everyone is reading Badges to their babies, including the baby next to us. And one of the nurses goes, you know, you need to make it a book. And I was like, okay, I'll make one copy of one book for my son.
Mm-hmm.
And like, well, I want a copy too. And I was like, okay, 2 copies. Okay, 20. Okay, 20 copies. That's it. I'm going to make this book. And so I end up doing that. I make this book for Eli. But the birth story, I mean, it really was such a story of beauty, the kindness of strangers. You know, we woke up Christmas morning and his room looked like Christmas. You know, like we had his little stocking and his little tree and we woke up and there were presents and like nurses had brought presents underneath the tree and strangers came by singing carols and every day we would eat because Ronald McDonald House would bring a sack lunch and we wouldn't leave our son.
This episode of Fam for All Moms is brought to you by OxiClean. I'm so excited to have a spotless, sparkling, fabulous looking house.
Wait, you guys don't understand. I went to Sharzad's house the other night to just have a drink with her because we hadn't done that in so long. And I walked in and it was so clean that I almost couldn't believe it. I was like, do children live here? Mm-hmm. And was it your OxiClean? Because am I not using my OxiClean right? Because your house was so spotless. I couldn't believe it.
You know, I'm the kind of person that like blasts the music and I almost zone out when I clean. Like it's, I know this for some people, it's not them. But for me, like music on cleaning, it's almost meditative, you know, to just kind of get in the zone. And I'm a neat freak. I love having a clean house. You know, I'm the kind of person that makes my bed while Michael's still sleeping in it because I get up early. Like the thought of walking by an unmade bed makes me sick. But OxiClean helps with all my linens. My, you know, I have that white island in my kitchen. It helps with funky stains on there. Well, you know, we spend so much time at home and it's really nice. And like I said, I'm a neat freak. So I am always obsessively cleaning and I'm always using OxiClean.
I love that. You know, OxiClean is just so versatile. You don't really even realize all the things that it can clean until you actually get it and you try it and you have that stain, you know, that you just cannot get out. Mm-hmm. This is when you need your OxiClean. You've got to try OxiClean Versatile Stain Remover for yourself. To work your magic with OxiClean, go to OxiClean.com/try me and order a free sample. I don't know what there is to lose. It's a free sample. That's OxiClean.com/TRYME for a free stain fighting sample while supplies last. Your birth story is not your own birth story. It's like, I mean, it, like when you listen, when I listen to you talk about this and back then, like you're, you know, it's, it feels like it's been so long. Mm-hmm. But you never really talk about your own experience because it was really more everything about Eli. Him. Yeah.
Everything.
Like,
in
were
me.
You, you were obviously healing.
I was.
You
like, were so going here I am laid up post C-section in this uncomfortable chair because I cannot leave my son. Mm-hmm. Then when they finally, I think it might've been Christmas Day when they were like, okay, you need to go home, shower, return to some normalcy. I had to call my friend Heaven to drive me down to the hospital.
She does have a friend named Heaven.
My friend is named Heaven. She's not a stripper, but her name is Heaven. anyway, she's from Vegas, but she's not a stripper.
I was going to say.
Yeah,
Vegas,
likely story. Oh. She's friends with Kitty. But, you know, Heaven took me to the hospital to see my baby. And, you know, it was like I had to rely on friends to drive me and all of these things. But, you know, I did not deal with the magnitude of what happened. Like I was planning Eli's first birthday and, you know, I was, you know, making the arrangements and all of a sudden I look at Nate, I was like, wait a second. Hold the Eli had open heart surgery.
Yeah.
And Nate was like, yeah, he did. And I was like, wait a second. No, wait. That's hard. Meltdown. Complete.
Like almost a year later?
Meltdown. Yes. A year later, I could finally deal with it because I wasn't breastfeeding and and Nate was like, we were all wondering at what point you were going to catch it. That you were going to deal with this. Wow. Like we didn't, and it wasn't denial.
No, it was just, you're strength. Busy. You're mom.
It's like I'm adrenaline kicks in, right? Totally. Adrenaline kind of kicks
you
in.
You have time to deal with your emotions
I don't
when you're nursing
have
and stuff.
He needs me.
Right.
And never mind my emotions. Everything I do is for him.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I have to cancel the birthday party because I'm a mess. I'm an absolute mess.
Backtracking, everything turned out great, right?
Yes. No long-term issues. No more surgeries that we foresee. God.
Yeah, like when was he better?
He's a 6-year-old now.
So better, I think it's a relative term because, you know, he got out of surgery and then we were supposed to be there 4 to 6 weeks. We were there for 2 weeks because he's a freaking warrior Spartan and got out. Mm-hmm. Then we had to go back and get a shot every month because RSV can be fatal for heart babies. Mm-hmm. So we had to go get that every month. And then we had to do the 3 month, 6 month, 9 month, 1 year check, and then 2 year, 3 year, 4 year. So we go every year.
Yep.
And as he at five, they have to do a different kind of scan. I forgot what it's called. You know, and this is just going to be his ongoing thing.
Yeah.
And you know, he has to take baby aspirin, like little things that, you know. And then you know, we have a healthy pregnancy, and I was like, this is so easy.
Yeah.
I don't have to come every day. What the heck? Yeah, what exactly. do you mean?
But I think that's, I mean, I point that out because I think that gives a lot of moms mm-hmm. and parents, dads hope that if they are pregnant or if their baby yeah. ends up in the PICU or anything like that right after birth, it can be a happy story because he's so healthy. He is so strong. You even breastfed yeah. after all of that.
Yeah.
Which is wild. Like people don't even realize you can do yeah, that even yeah. after you didn't hold your baby.
You can't breastfeed in the hospital. Like they were literally taking spoonfuls of colostrum from my breast to him for like two floors up. And then once we were, and that there's a whole Facebook support group for moms of heart babies who breastfeed because it's different. You can't, like I couldn't pick my baby up under the arms. Like mm-hmm. you had to pick him up under his bottom and, you know, hold him by the head because his sternum was still fusing shut. You mm-hmm. know, like there were just little things we couldn't do that you would do with most babies, right? But he was, what was interesting about him is that, you know, my father-in-law, he was like, he's a touchstone. He reminds us all to live a better life.
Yeah.
And he, from day one, has always inspired. And we named him on day six. And the birth certificate lady, like, kept coming by. Like,
oh, they do that.
You have a name
so
yet?
Annoying. You're like,
I don't even know what he. I don't even know what it looks like. His face is swollen. It's covered in tape, like because I thought it was strange to name a baby that I'd never met. Because I remember my mom saying she saw me and I looked like an Elizabeth, and I was like, okay, so you look at a baby first and then you name it. Like, again, my view is so weird. Like, I know that now.
It's not normal.
I've heard that before.
Yep.
It just felt strange. So when I saw him, like, I remember the day they took the tape off, and I was like, and then I had this huge internal struggle because my mom had always said, because, you know, my birth certificate says Jane Doe.
Yeah.
And my mom had always explained, when you love somebody, you give them your name. And so I was like, well, I can't name him Elizabeth. And don't think I didn't think about it, because I did. And I was like, I mean, he could be a masculine Elizabeth. He could make it work. And so Eli is the first three letter of my name. Yeah. So that's how he ended up with his name. And, you know, we named him on day six, and, you know, he's magical. And I get to go through motherhood knowing that I always have 6 days to make up for of just holding and loving and squeezing him tight. But it was a tough pregnancy because, like, A, the cerclage, but I also broke my toe.
That's right. Oh my gosh. Broke my freaking toe.
Had a sinus infection that became an abscess. So they had to extract a tooth, and then had the nerve to tell me that I could take children's Sudafed for 3 days. I threw it in their face. I'm like, keep your children Sudafed.
How dare you say that to me?
Exactly. I had the sciatica. So I'm walking through with my little zingers, and then both boys fractured my pelvis. So, you know, I had real
pregnancy
tough...
sounds like a dream with you.
Right. And people are like,
and you did it again. And she still did it a second time, everybody.
That's the trippy part.
18 months later, we had another baby.
You weren't ready then. I remember you were like, I'm going to start getting in shape and all that. And then a month later, you're like,
so we got pregnant. That's weird. 2 weeks after I stopped breastfeeding, I was so excited. Somebody told me that.
Yeah. Well, okay. So we are running out of time. I love when you share that story. She went on also, you guys, to work for what was the nonprofit that you were working for recently?
Leukemia and Lymphoma Society.
Yeah, and partially because I feel like you just love helping other parents who needed that help.
I do, and you know, the great thing, like badges really started a movement. People sent me a link of a news feature in Chicago of this dad saying, like, go on, son, show him your badge. And sure enough, on the coffee tables, badges. Like, it started this cool little movement. And, you know, and now I go to Reading Week at my son's first grade or kindergarten class. I give each child a copy of a book I wrote for my son. Eli is now at an age where he can read badges to me, which happened for the first time a few months ago. And it, like, moved and touched my heart. And now I have to work on a book for Nathaniel because, you know, the younger kid's like, so what about my book?
You're like, well, you're perfect.
And I was like, okay, healthy about, baby. We'll do it about a honey badger with a heart of gold. He's like, I will write a book for Nathaniel.
Yeah.
He deserves that.
But Eli is such a beautiful, healthy. He's a big boy, by the way, everybody.
Yeah, he's
tall, big, smart.
Big eyes. He looks just like me.
They were over. Oh my God. He looks.
It weirded you out the first time. You're like, it's weirding me out. He looks like just like
he would move his eyebrows exactly the same way as Elizabeth. And you guys, mind you, I had also never met a biological relative of Liz.
Yeah.
So I saw him and I was honestly like freaking out a little bit.
Yeah, it's like, freaking me out.
I can't. He's like your spitting image. Even your expressions are the same
in this little boy version. It's so weird.
Yeah. So wild. It was so wild to see that happen. But I mean, it's true. There can be happy stories even in the most scary times. And I feel like we didn't even get to even like the meat of how much was happening and stuff. But I mean, I think there's always hope.
And that's one thing in the book.
You have such a theme of hope in your life.
It's just so rare
and special. And I just see it every single time we talk. And it's a unique thing. I don't know if you realize how special your, you know, outlook on life is.
Yeah.
I mean,
you've been
dealt some crazy hands. And, you know, I keep learning more and more about them as I've had the opportunity to talk to you. And I think you're a saint.
Oh, you're so kind.
Yeah.
No, but in the book Badges, like there's a little hummingbird named Hope and she's on every spread.
Yep.
And it's that message, like hope's always there.
I've never seen Liz like really, like when it came to her Badges book, it was like there was a passion there and she knocked it out so quickly. And like it just flowed out of you. And it's such a beautiful little book.
Thank you.
Really quickly, you know, now that we're going over this story, you know, I was in some ways now I'm like thinking about it. I'm like, was I kind of a bad friend because I wasn't there?
No, you know, not at all. Not at all.
You know, like when you before you have kids, you don't really realize how much you're not helping your friends that become moms.
Oh, for
because
sure.
you don't know. Right. Like you just don't really know. And then on top of it.
Yeah.
You know, like you were going through all of this. What would be something that you think would be helpful for friends to do?
I will tell you right now, the number one thing, I mean, this is what ended friendships from that season. Do not make a hard situation harder.
Yep.
Don't make it about you. Don't get mad that I didn't call.
Oh my God. Charlotte.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh my God.
Like, because you do have those friends who then have to get a different label because like, this is hard enough.
And the pressure to call somebody back when you're in a tough season and there's so many people to call back. And
I'm just trying to make it.
Oh, trust me, I can.
And you can never view that person the same.
It's never the same. I'm in the middle and I've heard both of you guys complain about these kinds of friends.
Yeah.
I'm glad I'm not one of them.
No, not at all.
Explain to everybody what you're talking about. It's that friend who's like constantly badgering you and it's under the guise of them. Yeah. Like it's under the guise of checking 100%. On you, but it's selfish. Really, yeah.
And there's a pressure. Anytime you're applying pressure or there's an expectation, what I want, send me a text. I love you. No response required. Like, do you know what I'm saying? Because because it's just 100%. One more thing you're beating yourself up about. Like, I know I suck right now. I know I'm not being a good friend. I know I'm not returning your calls. I know. Trust me. But there are those people that make that season harder and it will never be the same.
100%.
It can't be because that person that will make it about them once will continue to make it about themselves again. And so I think my advice to anyone who has a friend who is experiencing hardship, don't make it harder and don't force yourself in doing what you think will make it easier.
Yeah.
Like, just give people space.
Perfect.
So, no, you were not a bad friend.
Oh, good.
Because you did
nothing. Oh, good.
No, because...
She's like, because you did nothing.
Thank God.
No, because you did nothing.
No, but that's not true. It's not that you didn't do nothing.
Yeah.
Because I would send pictures.
Yeah.
And it was never, well, what about this? What about this? What about... Because you do have those friends. It's like a million... Like, once you open that gate, they're like, I have 50 questions for you. Like,
yeah. I don't have time to answer all of your questions.
Not only the time, I don't have the desire.
And I don't
energy.
Fucking want to. Yeah totally. Like, yeah.
I'm doing all I can.
I just
freaking make it.
Because I've been through this exact experience and Susan
but
knows
that
all
is
about
hard.
It. It's really frustrating and it's annoying and it's been the demise of a friendship.
It adds complication to what is already hard.
Totally.
And it's like, great, so now I'm going to mourn this loss and now I just lost you as a friend.
Yeah.
That's way
cool.
to go.
Cool. Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't think in the defense of the annoying friends,
they don't mean to.
I don't think they're trying to, but they're just not self-aware to realize that what their actions are actually causing a stress or an annoyance or a distraction or a frustration.
Yes.
I'd like to think that most people's intentions in those situations 100%. Are good.
100%.
But I've realized for me personally, I don't like when somebody's not self-aware enough to realize that they're actually being selfish.
Very
and
selfish.
Just completely annoying.
Yeah.
So it's funny that you brought
The minute you started saying that, funny. I looked over at Sherzad because I knew she was feeling that.
Because she, yeah.
It's hard. It's,
anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, I love you.
I love you guys too.
Oh, what?
Next week, we have Elizabeth here again because we're going to share part three of the search for her biological mother.
Yep.
So I have chills just saying that. It's going to be a good one. Mm-hmm. I'm excited.
Mm-hmm. That's why she's here.
And guys, you know, check in with Elizabeth on Instagram if you like that. If you want to connect with anybody on Instagram, then okay. So you're at Elizabeth.Hunterton. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's what I thought. Yeah. And we'll put links to that kind of stuff in the description of the podcast as well. So you can connect with her and a link to your book, Badges.
Yeah. Oh, thanks for having me on, ladies. It's always a pleasure.
I mean, you can't get rid of us now.
Well, she hasn't gotten rid of me for almost 2 decades. So.
Despite my best efforts.
Just kidding.
I love you, ladies. Like a bad rash that won't go away.
I know, right? Kitty.
Kitty's back. Oh, yeah, she definitely says Vegas. Yeah, Kitty says Vegas. Anyway, on that note, thank you guys for listening and supporting this podcast. We'll see you next time. I keep saying we'll see you next time, but we won't see you.
You'll hear us next time.
Yeah. That was cute to say. Bye, everybody.
Bye.